Yeah, I was just going to mention that in the international section of our union in the United States, we have a person, can't remember his first name, it's Youngdahl is his last name, who works, he works on the affirmative action, the laws in the United States, and he's been very successful. Of course, there's also the problem, not only with women, but with the blacks and a number of other ethnic groups that have had problems in various hiring and other things. Mm-hmm. And he's been very, very successful in winning money and jobs for those people. And I'm sure that if you were to get hold of the international, they could probably give you quite a bit of history on that particular thing.
That would be useful.
Yeah.
Okay. So the union was completely organized when you came into it, so we won't mm-hmm. talk about that. We were talking a bit about political action, right?
Yeah.
So can you...
Well, I think political action is very, very necessary, because everything we do in our lives is controlled by legislation, or almost everything. And that goes for hiring or various other things, although the unions sometimes have control over some of those things through negotiations. There's so many things that the legislation controls that if people aren't politically active, then they're not really having any say in their own destiny, I don't think. And that's why I belong to the NDP, and I'm president of a Centennial Club, which is in the Coquitlam constituency, and take an active part, because I really feel that that's one of the answers, one of the main answers to a lot of our problems.
Is to elect a different government.
Mm-hmm. Right, and then make the changes that are necessary with that government, and we were doing that. I think we were successful in a number of areas while the NDP was in for that short time, such as I mentioned before, in the Changing the Factories Act and the putting some teeth in the human rights legislation.
Right. Do women within the plants that you worked in, or were women within the plants you worked in, politically conscious or active? Did they think in terms of political organizations? Were the active women political, and was there any kind of separation between those women and the rank and file women in terms of, I guess, their level of politicization?
Well, there aren't too many that I could tell you offhand that were that politically active. We used to have some really good discussions, because as I mentioned to you off the tape, this friend of mine, Marge Storm, is also politically active. Her and I think a lot alike on a number of things, and we worked on the same shift. She was the plant chairperson and I was the secretary of the committee, and we'd have our lunch breaks and before breaks, and coffee breaks together. And so there's a whole group of women usually sit together. For some reason, they still segregate themselves into certain sections of the canteen or lunchroom. Some do, some don't. But we used to sit in this one area and talk. And of course, it would always invariably end up either on union things or political things. And so then you get some interest in some of the women that are around you. And so we were able to, in fact, at one time, I think a good part of our shop stewards were women, because we had encouraged them through talking to become active and take an interest. And also, they were politically interested as well, because our union as a whole takes a very active part politically. I think one of probably the most active unions politically in the province. And certainly our local union does a number of things. Well, Jerry Stoney, our president, is now president of the NDP. But we've had educational sessions on political action, and we have a political action committee, and most local unions do within the IWA have a political action committee.
Right. So there was a period when many of the shop stewards were women. That's quite significant.
Yes, There aren't so many now, unfortunately. Some of them left the industry, and it slackened off. But I'm sure, you know, it'll come back again. There's still a fair number of active shop stewards within our plant that were women. And of course, the two leading positions on the plant committee were held by women.
Okay. What about within the sort of leadership structure of the union? What kind of chances, in a sense, for affirmative action were there within the union, within the IWA itself? Are there women in central leadership positions? Should they be there? What kind of process would be necessary to get them there? Why aren't they there?
There are no women in leadership positions except in our local union, and I believe one other local union, the two recording secretaries are women, which aren't full-time jobs. Mm-hmm. I don't really think there would be anything actually keeping women from getting those positions if they were active enough. But and maybe that's a problem with the union, that they haven't been encouraged to be too active. Now I'm talking about a fair number of years ago. In the past few years, they have been encouraged more, certainly. And in fact, I was encouraged so much I ended up as regional safety director. So it's, you know, there is a potential now for women to, I think, to seek leadership positions if they wish to, mm-hmm. you know. But unfortunately, there aren't that many that are looking in that direction.
So there's been a shift in attitude in
this. Yes, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think did that? Was it the women's movement? Was it a number of women, you know, within the union itself being active and pushing for those kinds of changes?
I think that was part of it, yeah. There weren't a great number. In fact, one time I can remember several regional conventions where Marge and myself were the only women there. But one of those conventions, we had six resolutions on women's issues, and her and I took turns speaking on them, and that was my first time I spoke at a mic at a convention. But we did receive, we were well received, mm. I will say that, and we were well supported. And so there really wasn't a problem. If we had brought forward those things earlier, I think we would probably have been well received then. I don't really know. Leaderships have changed, and I don't know. But I think there's a whole different understanding. I can remember we asked for a women's conference within the union to discuss some of the problems, and we were given a one-day session. There weren't too many women showed up to it, but Jack Moore was leader of the union at that time, and he attended. We had asked for someone from the, and he sat there, and there was two people. Carolyn Gibbons, I believe, was working for the Fed at the time, and trying to think the status of women's committee. There was a woman from there. Anyway, we just sat, and really it wasn't a meeting, it was a discussion. We just, because there wasn't that many of us there, we sat and we discussed all of the problems that were occurring. At that time there was still the hiring problem and this, the other thing. And Jack Moore, I think at first he kind of felt that it was a little bit of a tea party situation. Then when he realized and we started talking seriously about the problems, he was really convinced in just that one meeting, and he was a good supporter, and as Jack Monroe has been, you know. So I think it has changed a lot.
Yeah.
But I think it was just that they didn't understand before that. And
mm-hmm. yeah. Right. Okay. How did the men in the union, we've talked a bit about the union leadership and we've talked about women being in positions of responsibility like stewards, how did the men react to women in these positions? Did they treat them like other shop stewards, or did they have even special expectations from them around the kind of work they could accomplish within the union?
I found from the time I started, you know, I expected to meet with some problems. But I found from the time I started, I was well received. Men came to me with their problems, you know, and we were able to, I think when you're on a plant committee, it's a little bit better in a way, because you can, when you're successful in a grievance, then people know about it. And whereas in safety, if you've prevented an accident from happening, who knows, you know? So it's not so rewarding as it is being on a plant committee. But I think that when we were successful, and we were a lot of the time in our grievance cases, and of course then the words gets around that, well, go to that person, they'll help you out. And, you know, from then on, I never had any problems. The men always, and the men always supported, well, the number of years that Marge has been elected plant chairperson and that I've been elected secretary, with the amount of men we have now in comparison to women, it proves that, you know, we always got a very high vote, so.
Right. A bit of a shift. You talked before about how when you first became active as a steward, you began to challenge management. It sounds like becoming active in the union really changed your life in a lot of ways.
It did.
Can you
absolutely
talk about that?
Changed my life. I used to be very, very, well, I don't know if you'd call it shy, but I was afraid of people. I was, when I first started, I had been married before, and as I mentioned earlier, and I was married at 16. And I don't think I ever grew up very much, you know, until I started to work at PV, or Canadian Forest Products. It used to be called Pacific Veneer, that's why I said PV. And so I was still not an outgoing person, you know. I couldn't talk to people without blushing and this kind of thing, you know, and get all hooked up in my words and that. When that fella came up to me and asked me to be on the safety committee, somehow gave me an idea that, and he told me, well, we've been paying some attention to some of the things you say to the other girls about union things, and we think you could do the job, you know. And that was the first time I think anybody ever had sort of a little bit of confidence in me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any in myself, but from then on, the people in the union were so good about encouraging me to go on, you know. When I first ran for safety director of my own local union, that was an elected position. And I said, there's no way I can do it. People said, yes, you can. They encouraged me to run for it, and I did, and I was able to do it. But it was only through that encouragement, you know. But it did. It changed my life completely. And, I was married for the second time, and my husband at first wasn't very active in the union. And that caused a bit of problems at first, because then I was attending a lot of meetings and he wasn't. And we sort of sorted that out. And I said to him, well, look, you know, the children were grown, and my daughter left 1 year. She was married and then the next year my daughter left. And boy, that leaves you just flat, you know. And I said to my husband, well, look, you know, we've got lots of time on our hands now. Why don't you get active? And he did. And he became a shop steward, and he's also on the plant committee. He's also on the safety committee. He's a trustee of the local union. So he's active, and that's been a big, big help. You know, we both are active in the union. Then they put my name forward for the regional safety director, and I got that job. And so now I'm no longer in the plant. You know, it's a full-time job. But he's still active in the mill.
Did you become politically active, involved in the NDP, at around the same time as you became active in the union? Did one follow on the other? Or?
I had always, I was raised in the CCF family, right. And so that was always my leanings anyway. I always voted that way. But I never took an active part till... I guess it was about 1970 before I actually actively started to participate in the NDP. And I worked during the campaign in 72 when they were elected, and then on became quite active. Then became president of Centennial Club, I guess, about 3 years ago, and I'm still in that position now. I've been asked to run on a constituency. Well, I was asked to run for constituency president, but I wouldn't do that because it's a lot of extra work, and it takes a lot of extra time, you know.
Yeah, sure. Were there, once women became stewards and once they became more activated within the union, were there women's issues that began to get incorporated into contract demands such as issues around safety conditions, conditions of work, maternity leave or maternity benefits, child care, equal pay and equal work were already there.
The actual, as I think I mentioned to you, that we had a resolution, we had put forward a resolution one time on the hiring practices, and we wanted it negotiated, but however that was, we were able to achieve that through legislation and other ways, and it wasn't negotiated, except that, it says fair hiring practice in our contract as well. The other thing is that we did get was maternity leave. That was one other thing, but it isn't as we would like to have seen it with full pay maternity leave. All it really just says you shall be granted leave for maternity leave, and that and shall retain your job on return to work. But no, there isn't really a lot of extra things in our contract for women. Probably because we haven't I don't know if this is the way it works in other unions, but the local unions put in resolutions. They go then forward to the wages and contract conference for negotiations, mm-hmm. and they're debated there and accepted or rejected. And really, we haven't.
Agreement?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And really, we haven't had that many. We haven't put forward that many resolutions, except that one year that we put in. It went to the regional convention, 6, I think. But most of them had to do with legislation. They weren't really contract demands, except mm-hmm. the maternity. Leave, and we had asked for full paid. Well, of course, we didn't get that. That wasn't, they asked for it during negotiations, but of course didn't get it. It wasn't, I guess, a priority demand.
Yeah, that's something that people have talked about in other interviews too, is that women sometimes formulate really good demands, but then when negotiations happen, because those demands aren't prioritized,
yes,
some of them are dropped.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, and of course that happens sometimes with safety things too. We have some safety things in our contract, you know, such as mainly on provisions for safety equipment, which is provided free of cost, and pay for meetings, safety committee meetings, and this kind of thing. Those are things that have been gained, but. Safety often isn't a priority either, although it's becoming more. And last time in the negotiations, there was a demand for research, for money for research, a half a cent, I think, an hour per person for research fund. We didn't gain it, but it is a serious demand, and they are going to continue with that kind of a demand. We hope eventually to be able to set up a research fund.
Do you recall or feel that there are any strikes or actions that took place which had particular relevance to women within the IWA who worked in the forest industry?
No, there was just that, as I mentioned, there was that job action we took at our own operation over that particular situation where there was the 2 rates of pay at that time. And then one of the things that happened in our local union, or in the plant I worked in, we were having so many problems. This wasn't just related to women, it was problems in general. There was grievances and things had piled up and everybody was just fed up. There was a young fellow worked at the operation who had been a teacher, and he just got fed up with teaching and he was working in a mill for a while. So we organized a little group and we got this paper going, and it was called PV Echo, and so a whenever there was issues, particular thing, problems, and we would write up articles and then circulate this throughout the plant, and it became sort of the in thing if you had one of those in your pocket, especially if you went into management. In fact, very often you'd see management with one in their pocket. And some of the women's things were, I was asked to write things on, and I wrote up in that paper, and one of them was that prior to the time we had the right to any job within the operation, I mentioned this little sit down we had. So I was asked to write an article on that, and I did. And one of the things I said at the end was how management could solve it by opening all jobs to women. So there was things like that went on within when our own operation on some of the issues of women.
Right. Are there any particular individuals, women, you can think of, either presently in the union, but in particular in the past, who are seen as, or who you see as, playing a really significant role in building your union, other than yourself?
Oh, God. Well, I would say Marge Storm has done a tremendous job, you know, and you're going to interview her, so you'll hear more about it from her, but... she's done a tremendous job for a lot of years, and a lot of years she was the only woman struggling along, you know, trying to make changes, and not basically on women's issues. I think she was just a working person who was working very hard for the trade union movement, and then, of course, after I got active, then we both got interested in some of the problems that they were having with women. And with the different job rates and this kind of thing, but she's worked very hard and done a lot. But really, I can't think of anybody else's.
Do you think that, given the current economic situation, which is one of high unemployment, that women are potentially going to be very severely affected by that in the forest industry? That the same kinds of implicit policies that management had before of not hiring women, or in the post-war period in some industries of laying off women, might come into effect. Are they coming into effect now?
I haven't seen them coming into effect yet, because our industry is really funny. It seems to me when there is a recession and high unemployment in other areas, the forest industry doesn't have that problem. Then the reverse happens when everything is going pretty good. And I don't understand all the economics of the forest industry, although we've had that in some of our seminars. I still don't understand it too well. But for some reason that happens, and then when there's, you know, when things are good in other areas, we have our problems with layoffs and this kind of thing. So I haven't seen that happen, but I am afraid that that will happen. I'm afraid that, you know, if this rate of unemployment increases, the rate of inflation increases, and number of other things, that those, I have seen articles in the Sun, letters, you know, that along that line, saying why are women taking jobs. And although on the other hand, there's one other thing, that the younger people, the younger men that are coming into the workforce, and of course in where there's a lot of turnover, or used to be, there's not so much turnover now, but where there was a lot of turnover, we have a lot of young people in our industry. And I don't find that amongst the younger men. They accept the fact that women need to work, in the main. I mean, there may be the odd one that doesn't, but in the main, they accept that, and they expect probably that their wives will work, or their girlfriends, and so you don't run into that problem so much with them.